Oh my God, I have Denise Vivaldo's phone number in my phone. Excuse me while I take a moment. Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Awesome, Sarah. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you.
Are you excited?
I am thrilled that we get a chance to talk to our guest this week. She is a world-renowned food stylist and one of our friends that we met up at Camp Blogaway.
Mm-hmm. And several times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's delightful. She's charming. She's witty. She is funny as can be. And she doesn't wear gloves when she's swinging.
No, she does not. It should be a very interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we have been looking forward to it for a long time. It's been a few months in the making. And she's a dear friend of ours. I'm going to steal. Sarah's always saying she shouldn't be using the word excited so much. But I am excited. And that's why we were laughing earlier.
Because, yes. Yeah,
this stuff is not only fun for us, but it's exciting. And our guest, who is?
Denise Vivaldo.
Yeah, she's exciting.
She just recently got back from South America, I believe, and she's headed off again in a little while to Ireland and other places to do other food styling workshops. And I can't wait to talk to her and hear more about what she's doing and what's going on in her world.
Yeah, and if you thought that Sarah and I at Food Blog Radio were well-known and famous, you ain't met Denise yet, because she knows people who know people. Who know people, yeah. So,
exactly.
Well, let's, and she's down where you're at.
She is. She lives in, I think, Beverly Hills, but I'm not sure. No, I don't think that's right. We'll ask her.
Yeah,
but she is down my way, yeah.
All right. Well, let's get her on the phone.
Let's do.
Okay, cool. Well, damn, that broke. We
are pulling out our hair right now.
We are. So
the wonders of modern technology.
We've been battling for an hour and 15 or 20 minutes to get our Skype coordinated. We have Denise on the line. You don't know that, but we have Sarah on the line. You do know that.
Yes.
And I'm going to go and kick back, because Sarah, you're going to handle this interview, right?
I got it. That's right. We're going to work through all of the Skype issues that we're having, and Denise and I will just have a great chat, and we'll just pick you up at the end.
We will. Okay, you guys. Enjoy. Have a great time. And, you know, we both love Denise, so give her my best.
I sure will. Here you go, guys. Let's talk to Denise.
Tell Gary for all his hard work, he got the bum's rush, as we say. We kick Gary to the curb. Thanks for the help, as we say. Television.
Okay, so basically what I'm going to do is run through some just quick questions, because we figured we're super casual and we just want to,
I love it,
you know, listen to you and say hello and connect with you again. Gary did have a request. He said he wanted you to share your Julia Child story.
I wonder which one.
I don't know. I can ask him.
I have several, but I'd be happy to.
And
several. Some of them are totally inappropriate, but I have many Julia Child stories, but I'd be glad to. I'm sure I said one that was clean.
You don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
We're not a PG show. We'll put a disclaimer at the beginning.
There you go.
So tell us a little bit for our listeners out there. We kind of did an intro already way back an hour or so ago.
Really? yesterday when we started.
Yes. People know who are listening. They know you're a food stylist. They know you're a food blogger. But how did you become a food stylist? How did this journey for you begin?
That's a very good question, Sarah. I went to, here's when I was, my first marriage, long time ago. I was a kid. And I was putting my husband through dental school, and a very dear friend gave me a copy of Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking. So I had to cook dinner anyway, and it became my hobby. So I worked all day and, you know, worked putting my husband through school, but on the weekends I would just cook and cook and cook. So I really taught myself French cuisine from Julia's book. Julia taught me. Then when he was getting out of dental school. I said, hey, I'm going to go to school now. So I went to the Culinary Academy in San Francisco, looked at it, signed up, decided I would go, and got accepted. And then the marriage like fell apart like a bad pancake. And then I started working for my dad for 4 years. So that put cooking on hold again. Then finally, Sarah, I went to school. I was 33 years old. And I had been making, what I used to do is, if I made a cake out of Gourmet magazine or any magazine, I just copied the cover. Do you know what I mean? I set it up to look exactly like the cover of the magazine. So then when I got to the CCA, and I'd been cooking now at school for 8 or 10 months, I got to go on a tour of Sunset Magazine, and there I saw food stylists working, and I saw the home economists and people that were, you know, creating this work, and I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. So there wasn't a lot of opportunity then. That was like 1983, but then I decided to move to LA because I knew there'd be more work in food styling and television and in films, and that's what I did. And then I was a caterer. And Aaron Spelling came to one of my parties, and he was the biggest producer in Hollywood in those days, and put me to work on Dynasty. It's Joan Collins in the morning. It was so fascinating, and so, because I had not worked on a TV set before, I didn't realize, it was fabulous. It was fabulous. Big cast, big set, lots of money. It was the 80s. It was fun.
Sounds fantastic. So circling back then, you said that you learned to cook through Julia Child's cookbook.
I really did. Yeah.
And so when were you actually able to meet her? Because I know that you have
I met her so many times, Sarah. I met her through IACP, just so you know, it's a networking group. When I met her assistant, I'd already met Julia, but then Julia had an assistant named Stephanie Hirsch, who now lives in New Zealand, for 16 years. So I was seated next to Stephanie at a dinner one night, and we started talking. And then when she said, oh, you know, I'm Julia's assistant, we became, you know, we stayed in touch and became friends. So on and off through the 80s, 90s, and at the end of Julia's life, I you know, saw her, worked with her, stuff like that. My favorite Julia Child story is, if I can bore you for a minute, was...
Please do. And you're not boring at all.
Because she was such a character, to say the least. Often edited, Sarah, because she said things that were totally inappropriate all the time. But because Julia said them, she didn't even know they were inappropriate. I mean, she would just say stuff, and everyone around her would like go, uh-oh. But... this was my favorite, very first time I ever met her. I was working on the Home Show, which is no one will know. You're too young. It was in the 80s, and she was a guest. And she arrived, and she was talking about, everything was set up, but she was talking about, she brought a cake that she wanted to put on the table. So she passed me this cake. I was totally in awe that, you know, I was meeting Julia Child, and now I had to help set up her display, and I'm a nervous wreck, and I open the box of the cake, Sarah, and it looks like someone has sat on the cake. Oh. I mean, the cake is a mess. It's a mess. It's like she ran over it with her limo. And I kind of squealed when I opened the box, and I said, oh. And she looked at me and looked at the cake and said, oh, dearie, that cake's going to need some nuts. And I thought, huh? And I thought, this cake needs a new cake. But I kind of shored it up. I don't know where I had the nuts because I hadn't brought them with me. I probably went to craft service and found some, chopped them up, and threw it on the cake. The cake just looked like a smashed cake with nuts. But Julia was happy, and they went on, and it was one of the, but I'll never, and then she thanked me, and that was, she left. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. When I told her that story like 20 years later, she just howled. She said, oh, well, you handled it. She thought that was the funniest thing she'd ever heard. That I was scared and that the cake looked terrible.
That's awesome.
She had a personality, I'll tell you that.
Who are some of the other favorite personalities you've had an opportunity to work with?
And a lot of good ones. And a couple of stinky ones. I'm looking at Cindy. Oh, yes. Now, well, Cindy's mouthing names to me from her desk next door. Some of the funnest people I've ever worked with have been Marielle Hemingway is really funny and very nice. And Richard Simmons, who you should get paid for to work for the day that you work with him, and then you need to get paid for the day that you have to stay in bed the next day because you're so tired. That's not fair to only get paid one day when you really need two. Richard Simmons is lovely. Who else is lovely? Oh, there's Paris Hilton was lovely when I worked with Paris Hilton. I haven't had a lot of stinkers, Sarah. Most of the people I've worked with have been, you know, they just want to get the job done, to be perfectly honest. And if they're professional, regardless of what, you know, my job as a food stylist is to sell stuff. That's really what a food stylist, I mean, we make beautiful presentations of food, but our job is to support the brand and to make stuff. So whether we're selling a barbecue and we have to make beautiful food for the top of it, or a knife. One of the things when I was an intern on Martin Yan's show, this is so many years ago, Martin Yan was the first person, he owned the cleaver, okay? Nobody else owned it. That was Martin's, that's how Martin made money. He was a genius. So he used to say he'd be cutting and chopping and talking and stuff, but he'd have that cleaver and he'd say, does the cleaver look good? It's a very sexy cleaver. So, you know, we sell stuff. We're there to support the brand. That's really what our job is. So I've worked with Emeril Lagasse is the nicest guy in the world. Wolfgang Puck is the nicest guy in the world. I mean, they're just hardworking people. Betty White. Cindy and I got to work with Betty White one day for about 14 hours. And I think that was probably one of the highlights of my life because she was so funny and so smart and so professional. And of course, she's been doing this for 60 years. So you put her in front of a TV camera, she could be the director. In fact, kept correcting the director the day we worked with her, like saying things like, we already covered that, honey.
Well, she's allowed to do that.
Oh, she's so allowed to do that.
Absolutely. So you've done a lot of television work and a lot of magazine work. You do a lot of traveling as well. You want to tell us a little bit about some of the places that you've been and the jobs that you do when you are not in the United States?
Well, Sarah, some of the travel is work. Some of the travel is I've set up my own workshops in different parts of the world, and then people invite me. So the example is this year, I'm supposed to go to Ireland for a workshop set up by they're a big food magazine in town, in Dublin. Then I'm probably go back to South Africa because I taught a workshop there at the gorgeous restaurant school they have in Johannesburg. So then I got to go on safari for the week before, and I've been to Africa before, and you go to Africa to see those magnificent animals. That's why you should go there. It's so incredible. But I love to travel. I'll go, you know what I mean? I love to travel. You buy me a bus ticket to Fresno, I'll come. So it's, you know, but travel has been a large part of my career in the beginning. It depends on the economy, but my clients, I've gone to QVC with my clients. I've gone to HSN with my clients. You know, I've been in New York with my clients. So travel is certainly part of the job. When people trust you or like you, they want you with them.
Now, did you know at the beginning when you first started out as a food stylist that all of this travel was involved? I mean, what did you think at the beginning? Oh, this is what I'm going to do. And
all I know is I was working with Julia Child and had no nuts. That's what I know. But honey, no, you know what? I think, Sarah, like many, many, many people in food. Food has so many streams that you can make money at. So many streams that you can swim down. I'm just grateful. My career has some of it. I've worked really hard, but the other side of the coin is some of it just happens. Some of it is just one person likes you and tells somebody else, and it's referral business, and somebody else sees you speak and they invite you there. So I've just found that my career can take on a life of its own sometimes. You know, my job takes on a life of its own. Right. And most of it has been really pretty fabulous. There's one or two stinky days, but I try not to remember them.
So, in speaking of stinky days, what frustrates you the most? Without naming names or anything, what is the most frustrating aspect of what you do? And then, conversely, what do you like the best?
Okay, the hardest part is if someone now, see, we, Sarah, we have, when we work as food stylists, yes, we can come up with 15 different presentations for the chicken breast and are happy to. If that's it within this perimeters, some clients will say to me, Denise, do whatever you want, just as long as we sell, the chicken breast looks delicious and people want to eat it. Then there's other clients that know exactly where they want to put the chicken breast, exactly where they want the piece of lemon zest next to it. Now, that's fine. So some days I'm just a pair of hands and I know how the, chicken reacts under the camera. Sometimes I'm the art director. Sometimes Cindy and I'm speaking because Cindy and I have worked together for 16 years. Our favorite jobs, I'll be honest, is when people let us do exactly as we like, Sarah, and then pay us the big bucks. Ah, doesn't always happen like that. The other, if people, though, are directing us, the nicest thing that can happen is it's someone that has a good vision and someone who's a good communicator. When you say frustration, if someone says, no, I don't like that, okay, so I've made three plates and they don't like them, then what do you like? And that, but they can't tell me, okay?
Right.
So then that's where the frustration is that, so then you're kind of taking out crayons and a piece of paper and saying, let's draw out what we think you want. Because otherwise I can, honey, I can build plates all day long, but if someone can't, if I can't match someone's vision, we're not getting anywhere. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes.
It's, that's the food is the easy part. I always say this, the food is the easy part. The photography, someone else is in charge, the lighting, we know a little bit about it. We've become pretty good at reading film, reading images, but the clients are the hard part, honey. Always, it's the people. I used to say in catering, I can cook for 5,000 people. It's the 25 waiters that arrive that afternoon that, you have to hurdle to get through the thing. The food is not hard. It's the people.
So you have done food styling, catering. You went to culinary school.
Yep.
You do workshops all over the world. And yep. By the way, we're going to have to talk about the one in Dublin another time. but you are also an author. Because I have up on the shelf above me this food stylist handbook.
You're so sweet. Honey, this is for me, Sarah. It worked, and this was why building my career. When I first, in 1990, in the beginning of the 90s, after I had been in catering for many years and had a successful catering business, made money, thank God. But I had a business card printed, and I was networking, and it said, chef, stylist, writer on it. And I remember a really huge editor in those days in a magazine that no longer exists, it's just all changed. But she said, oh, honey, you shouldn't do that. You can't have three different careers. You can't have three things on your business card. You're either this or you're that. She said, this will be totally confusing. You'll never get any work. And I thought, well, why? Because, I can do all those things. And what I found, Sarah, was in order to create enough income for myself, I was a single woman, I did need to do more than one thing. Do you know what I mean? So I was just tap dancing as fast as I could to create a business and some work. So in between, it's not that once you've written one book, the rest of them are easier, I swear. It's the first book to me that was just excruciatingly painful. But just like recipes, books are formulas. You need the front matter. You need an acknowledgement page. You need a table of contents. You need six chapters. You need an index. So once you start learning the process, it's just like on your blog, Sarah, that I'm sure you've gotten much faster as the years have gone by. Or new bloggers will say, it takes me all day long to shoot a picture. No, it doesn't. Not after you've done it for a while. Do you know what I mean? You'll get quicker and quicker. So I just found that I needed to do more than one thing to support myself when I was a single woman. I needed more income, and that's why I did it. Writing books is wonderful. Is it a huge moneymaker? No. Even, if you're Giada De Laurentiis, yes. you know, but she is an example. She had a, when she was on top on TV, her first book sold like 750,000 copies. Her last book has probably sold
not that many.
or 10% of that, because she's not in the same public eye. And that's not a criticism at all, because we've worked with her a couple of times and she was lovely. I'm just saying, in our celebrity driven food world now, which used to not be. I mean, God, when I was a kid, if you said you wanted to be a chef, people made fun of you. Wolfgang Puck tells the marvelous story of being on a dance floor in a nightclub in the 80s. He was the chef at Ma Maison, probably one of the finest restaurants in the world. And he told the girl he was dancing with, he said, I'm a chef. And she left him on the dance floor. I'm sure she thought, oh, brother, I'm not dancing with a fry cook. Do you know what I mean? It used to not be this kind of celebrity status. So cookbooks, when you're an unknown author or when you're just in the, you know, the trenches kind of writing cookbooks, it's not always a moneymaker, but it does give you great credentials, which leads to other things. And the Food Stylist Handbook that you mentioned is the reason I get all these jobs in other parts of the world, because they see the book and then they call me and hire me. So books do a lot of different things for your careers, I have found.
Yeah, and it is a fantastic book.
Thank you, honey, so much.
Such a great resource.
And we are writing the updated version that should be out this summer. We're doing, it's the same one. We just rewrote it with new film and added we're adding two chapters on photography.
Oh, fantastic.
For the blogger and for the, you know, the beginning photographer. So
that'll be wonderful. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how many books do you have now? I know.
Eight.
And are there any other future books on the horizon other than the new Food Stylist?
I have to tell you, Sarah, that's such a good, and there's one that Cindy and I thought of a couple of years ago, no one was interested in it. And the same thing, you know, that took me like 8 years to sell the Food Stylist Handbook, because everybody said, oh, the market's too small, nobody cares. And then they sold 10,000 copies in, you know, the first 2 months or something, because every blogger and new photographer bought it. So sometimes you have ideas that are before the market. We have an idea for a book. Cindy and I'll have to dig out that proposal, see if we want to do it again. And then I'm just working on a personal project, Sarah, for me, which is just stories of growing up in San Francisco when I was a kid with my Italian family. Because they're, you know what I mean? They could have carried cards that said, we're crazy. They need special uniforms. And as I write the stories, I think, oh, yes. It explains a lot, as we said at my house.
Are they going to be just your wonderful stories, or are you going to include recipes as
well? I'm going to put recipes in.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, and most of them, I'm updating them. Cindy was helping me with them yesterday. Just we're updating them so that they're easier for home cooks. But it's really very basic Italian cuisine. I mean, like home family cuisine, the things that, you know, you have a chicken in an Italian household, a whole chicken, you shove some rosemary and a lemon in the cavity and salt and pepper it well, and you roast it. And that's about it. Do you know what I mean? And you cook it for about an hour and 15 minutes till it's golden on the outside. That's one of the best chickens you're ever going to eat, but it's not fancy.
Well, that's okay. It's the family around the table that makes
That's right.
Absolutely. So I do want to take a step back. You mentioned Wolfgang Puck, and I know when you were a caterer, am I correct in remembering a story you have about catering the Oscars?
Yes. I had been the executive chef of, there were like five or six great catering companies in the 80s. Wonderful. All of them wonderful. And it was the first year, it was 1987, I think, the Academy opened up. They said, everybody give us a bid. And instead of just doing the food, buying the dinner at the Beverly Hilton, they said, we're going to do something special. And they were doing that, Sarah, because like markets, they were losing their audience. I mean, people didn't want to stay for dinner at the hotel. They wanted something bigger and flashier. So I got to my catering company that I was the executive chef. We threw our, you know, threw a proposal out there. And what happened is the Academy didn't pick us, but they liked me. So they brought me to the Academy Awards. And for 2 years, I helped whoever they hired to be the kitchen director. And my job was totally to make sure that all the food was in each the right kitchen. There were 1,600 people at the Oscars sit-down dinner. And so you divided up, Sarah, which is brilliant. And the rental company taught me this trick. I wish I could say it was my idea. We built four kitchens. So now each kitchen only had to turn out 400 plates instead of the whole number, because it was so much easier to in manageable bits and pieces. So we built four identical kitchens, and then it was only 400 plates for each chef. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
But my job was literally to make sure that all the food was in the right spot.
At the right time.
At the right time. And then you said, go. It was kind of, I have an old tape of it. It's so funny. It really, the chow, it's, I call them chow lines. There were so many people serving to get the 1,600 plates at once. It kind of looked like we're in the army. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was interesting. Wonderful experience. Parties like that are incredible because you realize if you like organization, or I mean, I loved it that it turned out. Do you know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. always a thing to me. I love it when it, I love to see the beginning, an idea go all the way to the end.
That's wonderful.
It was fun.
If you could cater a dinner party today with 10 people, choosing 10 people, anyone that you want, alive, not alive, from history or whatever, who would you choose to have at your dinner party and what would you serve them?
Oh, I would want to have Leonardo da Vinci at a dinner party. I would want to have Johnny Depp at a dinner party. I'd like, there's a whole lot of men I'd like to invite, Sarah. It's funny, no women are coming to mind at all. I'd like George Clooney, not his wife. And I'm sure she's very nice, but I'm not interested. And who else would I like? I'd like to have, well, I'd like to have Pablo Picasso there probably, so I could tell him that I thought he was just awful to women, and give him a lecture. I'm sure he wouldn't care. Well, I'd like to have some of the, let's see. I would like to have dinner with Eleanor Roosevelt. I would have loved to have had dinner with Eleanor Roosevelt and a dear friend of mine who's now very, very, you know, in her late 80s in New York, used to hang once in a while with Eleanor. So she has told me stories that makes me wish I'd met her. But what I'd serve, I'll tell you. Sarah, I've learned all the people I've fed in my life. People love, and this sounds so ridiculous, people love pesto on a pasta as a first course. I would probably make filet mignon just because I like it and it's easy and you can still enjoy your guests. You can roast it and then slice it. And my mother's au gratin potatoes. But I cook real classic food, Sarah. Do you know what I mean? I'm not... I really do. I cook very, or sometimes I do I would have a surf and turf sort of thing where it's a gorgeous piece of salmon on the plate plus a piece of filet mignon, something like that. It all sounds, but it, you know, I love food to taste the way it's supposed to taste and that it should be as delicious as possible. And it just tastes like the food. That's me.
That sounds like a fabulous party. I'm a woman, so I won't be invited, but I'll take pictures from the window.
Sarah.
I'll be one of your servers.
If you come, I'll put you next to George. So I would hope you're ethical enough to not try to steal him away from me before dessert.
No, I could be your wingman.
Okay, there you go.
I'd be, have you talked to Denise yet?
Because I'm sure he'd be so interested. He'd say, gosh, Mom, what time is dinner?
I'm laughing so hard I can't even find my list of questions that I had for you. So so wonderful. So tell us, you have mentioned, since we are just an audio recording podcast, you've mentioned your friend Cindy, who is sitting next to you a few times. Tell us about Cindy. How did you two meet? And what does she do for you?
Okay, this is an amazing story. Look, she's laughing.
I heard her laughing.
I've told you, Cindy, stop taking that chain off. You're chained to the desk for a reason, young lady. And don't you, what do you mean you got a file? Okay, no. Cindy came here like 16 years ago. Are you ready for that? I was a young woman. She was had just graduated from the CCA in San Francisco, which is where I went to school. And basically, she came as an intern. And Sarah, I've always had interns. People come from different schools, and some stay for 2 weeks. Some just want to get a month under their belt, whatever you know, work. Sometimes we've had one that only stayed 3 days because we fired her because the child was so annoying we couldn't stand her. On the third day, we like said, bye, bye-bye. But Cindy came. Cindy was a graphic designer before she went to the Culinary Academy. And she came, and within, I am not exaggerating, Sarah, because I've had a lot of assistants and a lot of interns. Within about 3 hours, I thought, oh, this kid is fabulous. You know, she's going to make it. This kid could actually, not everyone's good at being a chef. Some people are better like a home chef than they'll be in a restaurant. You know what I mean? Just like some people are better caterers than they are a personal chef. It just depends on what your strengths are.
Sure.
But I thought, no, Cindy could really be a food stylist. Not everyone's good, Sarah, because you have to be very patient to be a food stylist. People without patience. You're waiting sometimes 2 hours for a client to approve a plate. So you have to, if you want instant gratification and stuff like serving someone a bowl of soup and they rave about you, you may not get that. Do you know what I mean? And there, it's a different, and you also, since no one's going to eat your food most of the time as a food stylist, you got to find, you have to have internal praise, as I call it. You have to decide to pat yourself on the back and like and acknowledge your own talent because people may not do that for you. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to, no one's going to, the waters aren't going to part when you walk down the street. So, but this is my favorite Cindy story, and I don't think she'll be mind if I tell you this. This is just so adorable and so typical of Cindy. So she's been working here about 3 or 4 months, has tremendous cooking skills. Cindy learned to cook, I think, from her grandmother made pies in Venice Beach. Her mother was not a great cook, so Cindy sometimes says, I learned to cook out of desperation. I mean, there's all, but Cindy loves food. So we get this client, and this is very classic, Sarah. The client is actually a Korean manufacturer, but it's being the production company that's working with them is out of Vancouver, Canada. There is somebody from the Valley. I mean, this is like the international sort of crew that we sometimes work on, that everybody was from somebody else and everybody's got a job. But the bottom line is our client had bought an existing product that was on the market, infomercial product, and it was this thing that was, you were supposed to cook calzones in it, Sarah. And it was like this little long, like cooker. Now, of course, if you've made a calzone, you know you don't really need a cooker for a calzone. But anyway, I guess he had 100,000 of them in a warehouse he was going to try to sell. But he was the nicest man, spoke no English. Woody! Again, don't know where that came from. But Woody didn't speak any English, but he made beautiful calzones. So I'm out on the set and we're trying to just get the talent together. And I stick Cindy in the back, in a back kitchen, in this old beat up studio in Burbank. And when I say beat up, I mean beat up. They barely have an oven. And I say to her, make some calzones with Woody. And I just left her there. About 2 hours later, I come back. Most beautiful calzones you've ever seen. She and Woody have totally bonded. Cindy's laughing. Woody's laughing. Ha ha. They're talking to each other. She speaks no Korean. He speaks no English. So I have no idea. But I kept saying to her, what are you talking about? She goes, oh, it's, you know, inside joke. I thought, okay, never mind. It was so adorable. And they were both so happy and they made beautiful calzones. But I got home that night and I said to my husband, you know, when you can work alongside someone and make them laugh for 10 or 12 hours, just making calzones and you don't speak his language, I think you've got what it takes to be successful. It was wonderful. Woody and she, you know, it was adorable. I kept saying, what are you talking about? Because it doesn't matter. So that's my thing. But Cindy's been, so then Cindy's the intern, the extern, the never left. And sometimes we are shocked to realize how long it's been. I mean, we say to each other,
we haven't aged.
No.
We look at each other and say, how did this happen? How have we been working together for 16 years? But well, we have.
And it's a wonderful partnership.
We're so lucky. We are lucky.
That's great. Well, we are getting near the end of our time. We like to try and keep our podcast about half an hour. So Denise, take a minute and tell everyone who's listening, if they want to find out more about you, where can they find you on social media?
Oh, you're so sweet. Honey, they can go to my, of course, my webpage, denisevivaldo.com. I can waste lots of time on Facebook, so feel free to find me on Facebook. I mean, I can just procrastinate for hours and spend time on Facebook. I'll talk to strangers, Sarah, instead of do my work. Facebook is just D. Vivaldo, I think. And then I also, there is a Denise Vivaldo page on Facebook, too. I think D. Vivaldo is also my Twitter handle. I think that, but I don't, and then what else? Where else? Can, Instagram, it's D. Vivaldo. So I'm around, Sarah. I have people, the easiest thing to do, if you go to my website page, I have emails right off that page. Do you know what I mean? And people can just email me, though, if they have any questions. I'm excellent on email.
Yes, you are. I can attest to that.
I never answer my phone.
I can attest to that. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so very much for all your time. And
you have to thank Gary for the frustrating morning that he spent trying to get us on Skype. Guess we hadn't used it for a while. It needed to be rebooted. Anyway, honey, thank you for everything, and I appreciate Gary's patience. I really appreciate it. And I think you're a fabulous radio person.
Well, thank you so much, and I will definitely pass that along to him. I know he was disappointed that he wouldn't be able to, but he did send me a text and say, oh, I'm looking forward to listening to it.
That's so sweet. Well, honey, thank you again, and I hope to see you sometimes live soon.
Yes, I would love that. Oh, and speaking of live, let's take a second and talk about your cooking the books. You do have other project. Do you want to touch on that?
Here's what that is. It's with a darling Jenny Field, pastry chef online.
And we have had her on our show before, our listeners know who she is.
Honey, she's the greatest. I met Jenny at the Orlando Isabel's Food and Wine Conference. And it's classic of the... Jenny has been a very dear friend of Jamie Schlier, who lives in France, who's one of my dearest friends. So anyway, we all got to meet each other. So then it was Jenny's idea. She just said, Denise, let's do a show on Blab with food, cooking food. And I said, well, why don't we cook out of friends' cookbooks? Or off their blogs. It could be either, but most people, and a downloadable, it could be a downloadable book. Digital book, because Sarah, there's four authors. There's bookstores have disappeared. There's less and less places for people to really meet the author. I used to do book signings. All my friends did, and people could come and meet the author. And what happens is there's just not that kind of opportunity for people. So we have one on February 27th of this month. It's Blab. I know we have a Facebook page, so you can sign up there or join. But we have Jill O'Connor from San Diego. If you know Jill, Jill has written, I'm not sure how many books, but many great books. Chronicle is her publisher, and this one is called like Ooey Sticky Gooey Delicious Messy Chocolate. And it's we made one of the recipes out of it already, Cindy and I, and it was just marvelous. But so Jill's gonna come here to my kitchen, Jenny's in her kitchen in her house across the country, and we just cooked together for about an hour and a half on Blab, and we've done several of them now. They're really fun.
They are a lot of fun. We'll make sure that people know how to get to that, too, because they are fun to watch.
They're fun to watch, but I think especially, and we have a great lineup of guests that are going to come on, because people would love to be able to share their books. It gives you a chance to find out if you really want to buy that book or not.
That's very true. Awesome. All right, my dear. Well, don't hang up yet,
Sarah.
But we are going to say goodbye for our recording time, and we'll look forward to chatting with you very soon. Gary, I'm still laughing.
Oh my gosh. Well, you guys were awesome. Absolutely
awesome.
We had
such a great time.
Yeah, I could tell. I got to edit all that, and just it made me giggle listening to you guys the whole time. She is so... Well, the only word that really applies is vivacious.
Yes.
She's just rambunctious would work too.
Oh, I like that word. I think that's better. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was very cool listening to you guys, and I'm glad you were able to pull through and interview her for the team. And you did a fabulous job.
Well, thank you very much. And we did miss you, but that was a great conversation. She has had such an extraordinary life.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. And every time you sit down with her, you get a new story.
Yes, I was going to say, she has so many different stories of so many different... I mean, she, you know, just casually mentions, yeah, when I was interning for this person or when I worked with this person. And the list just goes on and you just... You just want to stop and follow her around and listen forever.
Yeah, she's the hoo-hoo of food hoo. She's pretty amazing. And, you know, I would just love to be able to remember just the stuff that... Was it that funny? Sarah just... She just had an accident.
Don't do that to me when I'm taking a sip of something. Oh, my God. I'm sure Denise is going to love that. She's the woohoo of all these different
Of food hoo.
Totally inappropriate.
She's the hoo-hoo of food hoo.
Let's not tell her that.
Once again, we've wandered off track here for a professional podcast.
Oh, yeah. Sorry to pull it together.
Anyway, as I was about to say, yes. If I could only remember half of what she's forgot, I would I'd be pretty amazed.
Well, I'm so grateful that she was able to come on and visit with us and that we were able to hook up and have a good conversation despite all our technical difficulties.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's always awesome. I'm sorry I wasn't there, but you know what? I think we're going to have to bring her back.
Oh, yes, let's do.
Yep, as always. Okay. And because we got to go and we got to say goodbye and we got to say, where can you find us?
That's right. You can find us on Facebook at Food Blog Radio, on Twitter at Food Blog Radio. You can email us, which, you know, Gary loves to answer all of your complaints and questions at gary@foodblogradio.com. And on our website, where you can listen to all of our podcasts, we are at foodblogradio.com. Are you seeing a trend here in all where they can find us?
On Food Blog Radio? Something,
I think so,
dot something or at something or yeah,
exactly.
Type in Food Blog Radio anywhere.
We are going to be looking forward to hearing about your upcoming trip next, because I'll actually get to interview you from Hong Kong. Is that
yes,
right?
We are going to do that. And that will be interesting because my mornings there will be your nights here. And so we're going to have to juggle that out, but I'm willing to do whatever it takes. For the team.
I'll stay up late for you.
Oh, you're awesome. Okay. Well, we'll see you in Hong Kong.
That sounds great. Bye, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye-bye. Be good to your heart.